to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham wrestle with superstardom in the post-rumors reality of Fleetwood Mac's Tusk.
Have to look at the phenomenon that was rumors, and I had a little bit of ambivalence about that too. There was a point at which it became less about the music and more about the phenomenon, but it was about the machinery and about maybe bringing out the voyeur in people. So there, you have to start with that in terms of how we got to Tusk. That's Sarah, you're the poet.
I mean, like, Sarah is a great example. Sarah started out at 16 minutes, so it ended up about 420. So a whole bunch of it went out. I figured it was more important to get Sarah on the record than to get so upset with everybody that the four of the verses were missing. In the studio, I'm Stevie Nicks with Redbeard.
Lindsey Buckingham here in the studio for Fleetwood Mac's Tusk.
By the time the October 1979 double album Tusk by Fleetwood Mac was released, the quintet of drummer Mick Fleetwood, bassist John McVie, ex-wife, singer-keyboard player Christine McVie, singer-guitarist Lindsey Buckingham, and his ex-lover Stevie Nicks hardly resembled the British blues rock band that had released 10 albums prior to Buckingham and Nicks joining in 1975. Fleetwood Mac had always been a revolving door at the lead guitar vocalist slot anyway, with stints by the legendary Peter Green all the way to American Bob Welch. But sales never topped 250 to 300,000, not until 1975's eponymous Fleetwood Mac album featuring Buckingham and Nicks, which sold over 5 million. Their follow-up in 1977, called Rumors, it went on to sell almost 20 million copies here in the U.S. alone, making it the number 10 album in music history. The Rumors album was still selling tens of thousands of albums every week when Fleetwood Mac reconvened in the recording studio for what would become the Tusk album. Singer-guitarist-songwriter Lindsey Buckingham joined me in the studio.
You must have been the only pig not at the trough when it came time to do another album. You know, why not get in line for another, you know, a Rumors 2, more Rumors, Son of Rumors. Bride of Rumors.
You have to kind of, for me as an individual, you have to backtrack to the whole idea of being in Fleetwood Mac to begin with. For me was, you know, it was a mixed bag. I was never completely clear about being in Fleetwood Mac.
You didn't want to join that night he came to the apartment. He said it took him hours to convince you and right. Stevie to join in the first place.
And without sounding melodramatic about it, there was a great deal more adapting for me to do from the place that I was at musically in order to fit in, almost, you know, letting go of a great deal of what I was about, at least initially. There was a place for a picking guitar if you happened to throw the one song on, but there was not a place for the kind of guitar playing that was on, say, the Buckingham Nicks album as an integral part of song writing or record making.
Yeah.
Fleetwood Mac's double album Tusk. That's Lindsey Buckingham's The Ledge.
Because the space was filled by really three things. The sound in general. Mick had a very fat drum sound, but more specifically a bass player who was ultra melodic, a bass player who asserted himself with a lot of melodic lines that were pretty intricate, which took up space, and a keyboard player who filled up a lot of space. So I had to take what was left. There was an element of adapting down, which was not always that enriching for me as an individual.
A musical compromise, pulling back.
Sure. Obviously, being in a band is always going to be a compromise. But as I say, in terms of what my drill was to be an appropriate addition to that group, it was part of it was giving up certain things approach-wise that I cared about. I don't think Stevie particularly had that problem as a singer. You know, I don't think it really changed her sense of enablement in the way it did mine. So there, you have to start with that in terms of how we got to Tusk.
Lindsey Buckingham underscores the climate in which this album was made.
You have to look at this, the phenomenon that was rumors, and I had a little bit of ambivalence about that too.
Like what?
Well, I think that to some degree, as wonderful as the music was and as real as it was, there was a. It felt to me that there was a point at which it became less about the music and more about the phenomenon. There was a point of departure.
Phenomenon or soap opera?
Well, that's what I'm getting at. I'm saying, you know, the music was the springboard, and the realness of that, the authenticity of where we were coming from, the fact that we were truly speaking to each other as couples. Within, it was sort of a unique thing that we were doing, you know. But after a certain point, the machinery, it was about the machinery and about maybe bringing out the voyeur in people. In terms of a line that you're trying to make, you know, the from point A to point B to point C, there was a danger of all of us slipping into the caricature of ourselves at that point. And believe me, that was a that was a very real thing if you were inside the band. But what you don't want it to do is come back and affect your thinking about how you see yourself, and affect, more importantly, how you think about making music and the reasons you're making music.
The Chain, performed live on Fleetwood Mac's 1980 Tusk tour and now included on the deluxe expanded edition. Up next, Lindsay and Stevie explore the Fleetwood Mac hit Sarah and the compromises she endured. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Stevie Nicks and Lindsay Buckingham for Tusk.
Welcome back to In the Studio with Fleetwood Mac. I'm Stevie Nicks with Redbeard.
Lindsay Buckingham here in the studio for Fleetwood Mac's Tusk.
Thank you both. Fleetwood Mac singer-songwriter Stevie Nicks confessed to me that she's a compulsive diary keeper.
I have probably 25,000 pages, typewritten pages of stuff I've been writing since I joined Fleetwood Mac. I have catalogs and put together the parts that I think that people would love to know about. The really fun parts, the great parts of Fleetwood Mac and the great parts of my solo career and the really great parts of rock and roll, because I've written them all down. And I've written the sad things, and I've written the really great things, and the really bad things I've written, but in a very philosophic way, you know, naming no people, but telling no lies. So one day, when this book comes out, if you read it, you'll find in it Goldust Woman and Dreams and Sarah and Gypsy and, you know, you'll find all my songs written in prose, because that's how I do it. I write in prose first, and then I go back and I put on any kind of music, whatever music I happen to be listening to at the time that I happen to really like, that has a really good beat, and I tune out what they're saying, and I type to the music. So I type. I use the keyboard of the typewriter like a keyboard of the piano, and then I'll come out with about 10 verses, and that's why my songs are always really long, and that's why it breaks my heart every time they get edited down and they start taking out my verses, you know, and I'm going, you're ruining my story. It's like seeing your hair all over the floor after somebody's just cut it off, you know. But I just wanted a trim.
A trim.
Every night.
Nick singing her composition, Storms, remarkably unaffected, from Fleetwood Mac's album, Tusk. Lindsey Buckingham comments,
What kind of presentation did this song demand when she brought this in?
Well, we wanted to, if we had done that in a conventional way, it would have come off like a country song, probably, a little bit. And we wanted to pull everything back. You know, it's like her vocal. She gets to a place where she's kind of, you know, right in here, like she's talking to someone up close, and some of the time she's a little fear and certainly pain is coming up and like this, and everything around it must hold that kind of line. It's a completely tactile experience, that song. And you know, the piano is played as a lightly. Christine just did a superb job. It's a whisper, that song, and it's one of my favorite things on Tusk, by far.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, she's...
I've never heard her that honest on a microphone.
It's such a vulnerable thing she's allowing herself to be in that moment, because...
You captured one there. That's amazing.
And it's ironic. You know, she's at a point where she's probably at the height of her visibility, and she's probably thinking back to a few years earlier, and how that the scale of that visibility and the choices she's made has put her in a position where she's really lost touch with a fundamental importance. And you know, every night that goes between, I feel a little less. You know, goes between. I mean, that's you know, a very suggestive line, and pretty major thing to say.
When Stevie brought in Sarah, how did you contribute to what we hear on Tusk?
Well, you know, I think the idea behind that was to take a song which was sort of in the mold of, not the song itself, but the whole kind of song in the mold of Dreams, say, and to deconstruct it a little bit, to make it not so, you know, clear, and here's this part coming in and going out, and this is the correctness of all of that, and the smartness of all of what Dreams was as a musical construction, and to fuzzy it up and to make it kind of ethereal, and you half the time you couldn't quite tell what was going on. You know, Mick played brushes on that instead of sticks, and so you had a kind of a lighter kind of lilt going on. It was really very bass driven, the bass part. A lot of kind of vocal things that would kind of that would just kind of come in and out.
Wonderful.
Seemed almost like they were could have been from a different song, and
yeah,
it just,
it's always moving.
And it's a long song.
It is a long song, but it doesn't feel long.
No, and so the idea was to take that kind of song, which Stevie would always write, and to just make it as kind of surreal as we could.
I don't want to be a cleaning lady. Wait a minute, baby. Stay with me a while. Said you give me life, but you never told me about the fire. It doesn't matter what for.
finally emerging on this super deluxe edition expanded version of Tusk. That's the 8.5 minute version of Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood Mac's Sarah. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, 24/7 at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're with Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham in the studio for Fleetwood Mac's Tusk.
Welcome back to In the Studio with Fleetwood Mac. I'm Stevie Nicks with Redbeard.
Hello again. Lindsey Buckingham here in the studio for Fleetwood Mac's Tusk.
Sarah is a great example. Sarah started out at 16 minutes, went down to about 10 minutes, went down to 7 minutes and 50 seconds, went down to 4 minutes and 40 seconds. And then I think they even edited it down a little bit more than that, so it ended up about 420. I know. So a whole bunch of it went out. And what I did was, I figured it was more important to get Sarah on the record than to get so upset with everybody that they, 4 of the verses were missing. I worked very hard to concisely pick out the verses that would put my point across without quite as much detail. And then I always think, you know, someday I'll walk over to the piano on stage and I'll actually sit down and play the 16-minute version of Sarah.
Yeah, you should do that.
And people will just go, because they've heard this story for years. And, I mean, a lot of the songs are that way. A lot of the songs are missing a lot of their real valuable parts. But sometimes you have to make compromises, you know. And, I mean, I compromised down to about 4.5 minutes. And then anything below that, then I'd rather say, well, then I only want 3 songs instead of 4 so that I can have my extra time in the 3, because it is more important to me to put this little bit of, you know, maybe possibly useful information over to somebody than to not have them get any of it at all.
Thank you.
if you examine the lyric for however obscure it is, or however narrow it seems to be in terms of its reference points, and then Tusk, those two things don't even go together. And we didn't care, you know. We were there responding to our impulses. You know, I probably went, or something, just, and someone went, oh, that'd be good. You know, it truly was one of those open formats for ideas. I brought the song in, and I think Christine and I, you know, did a little bit of work on the chords, and then we started playing around with it, and we couldn't quite get something that seemed to be hypnotic enough, but there was this one little section that Mick had done. And of course, back then, you know, if you wanted to make a loop of a section, you didn't throw it into Pro Tools and electronically recreate it. You had to do it in the physical world. Mm-hmm. So basically, we took this piece of 2-inch tape, you know, 24-track tape, so it was an endless loop. But, and the loop, I mean, I don't know how long the whole piece of tape was, but the loop itself was probably about 15 feet long.
Wow.
And, you know, they used to do this thing where you'd run it through the machine and out across the room, and then you'd get a mic stand.
A chrome mic stand.
Yeah, and you'd find something to make a spool out of that would handle the tape going by, and you'd adjust the heights. So we had this Mobius thing going for, and that became the drum track of Tusk.
Until the cleaning crew came through.
That's right. So basically, you run it from one machine and you copy it onto another, and you've got a drum loop, you know. And that became the song Tusk.
Thank you.
then, of course, the topper was that, and this was Mick's idea, was to get, you know, a marching band over it. And, you know, Mick was great at you know, making crazy large-scale things happen, you know, and he still potentially is. I don't think he has the opportunity as much now, but he called up this guy, Art Bartner, who was called up the USC and talked to this guy, Art, and he came down and he listened to what we basically had and went back and made charts and rehearsed the band. And we took him out to Dodger Stadium, we didn't really have to do, but we wanted some kind of outdoor atmosphere. I think we did that just for the spectacle of it, because we filmed it. Oh. And we recorded them, you know, overdubbing onto this song, and it was just the craziest thing.
Coming up at the same time next week, Mick Fleetwood joins Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks for part two of Fleetwood Mac Tusk in the studio. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks. Mick Fleetwood will join them both next week at the same day and time. In the studio, written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.